Was University Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. U.S. boosting efforts to help Syrian refugees. The United States will spend additional resources to speed up background checks in order to help deal with the increase in Syrian refugees who are seeking asylum in the country. VOA's Pam Dawkins reports.
State Department spokesman Mark Toner says while the United States has stepped up its ability to process the refugees, they still need to be thoroughly vetted.
There's a lot of terrorist groups operating in that region and that part of the world, and we need to make sure that fundamentally that we protect the national security of the United States of America.
He says the total number of Syrian refugees admitted to the United States since the start of the country's crisis in 2011 is expected to reach 1,800 by the end of October. Toner says ultimately what is needed is a political solution to Syria's crisis. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
The three-year-old migrant Syrian boy whose dead body was found on a Turkish beach when his boat sank was identified Thursday as Aylan Kurdi. The photograph of Aylan, dressed in a red T-shirt and sneakers, lying face down in the surf, ran on front pages across the world and on social media. A Guatemalan judge ordered former President Otto Perez Molina to remain in detention as the court considers whether to try him on corruption charges. Perez Molina resigned Thursday, hours after lawmakers stripped him of immunity from prosecution in a corruption scandal. The World Health Organization again declared Liberia Ebola-free. That after 42 days without a laboratory-confirmed case of the deadly virus. Liberia now goes into a 90-day period of what the WHO calls heightened surveillance. This is VOA News. Former Congolese rebel leader Bosco Ntaganda denied being a killer and a war criminal as he spoke at his trial Thursday in The Hague. Ntaganda acknowledged being nicknamed the Terminator, but said in his words, "That is not me." However, ICC prosecutors say Ntaganda commanded a rebel group that 12 years ago killed, raped, and exploited people in Congo's Ituri province. Officials from more than 30 nations and 40 international organizations are in Kabul, where they're spending a two-day regional conference talking about ways of rebuilding Afghanistan's financial structure. Ayaz Ghul has details.
The meeting, known as Rekab, comes as unemployment rises in Afghanistan, adding to its security challenges. Deputy Foreign Minister Hikmat Khalil Karzai emphasized the need for enhanced regional economic and transportation cooperation.
Our engagement with our partners should not be perceived as opposing the interest of another partner.
Karzai did not name any country, but was apparently responding to concerns that India and neighboring Pakistan are engaged in a proxy war on Afghan soil in their bid to influence security-related matters, though both the rival nations deny the impression. Ayaz Ghul, Islamabad.
Pakistani officials say they're planning to ask Afghan officials today whether Kabul is interested in resuming peace talks with the Taliban. The meeting on the sidelines of an International Economic Cooperation Conference in Kabul comes almost a month after peace talks broke down following news the Taliban leader Mullah Omar had died 2 years before in Pakistan. U.S. Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump signed a party pledge Thursday to support the eventual Republican presidential nominee and not to run as a third-party candidate.
The best way for the Republicans to win is if I win the nomination and go directly against whoever they happen to put up. And for that reason, I have signed the pledge.
Mr. Trump signed it at his Trump Tower building in New York during a meeting with Republican Party Chairman Rance Priebus. In the first Republican debate last month, Mr. Trump was the only contender on stage who refused to pledge to support the eventual nominee and the only one not to rule out a third-party bid. A U.S. federal judge in the central state of Kentucky Thursday ordered a county clerk to jail for contempt of court after she refused an order to issue marriage licenses to gay couples. Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis defied a U.S. Supreme Court order to sign the marriage permits, saying it violates her religious beliefs. In the meantime, five of her six deputy clerks say they will carry out the judge's ruling or face jail time themselves. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan rebels say they are committed to the implementation of the recently signed compromise peace agreement.
We are committed to this peace, and we have selected 11 senior army officers to attend this workshop in Addis Ababa on the 5th of September to the 8th of September.
Ambassador Ezekiel Lo-Gatkuov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader calls on his supporters to take to the streets against what he calls worsening economic conditions. Ghana considers demands for a fresh voter register, and Nigeria reinstates 3,000 soldiers who were dismissed for alleged indiscipline.
Anybody that is involved in criminal offense, his charges were not treated. So basically, it was offenses that ranged from minor administrative issues to disobedience.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is spokesman for the Nigerian military. Diabetes is becoming a growing health threat in Africa. E-learning takes off in villages across Cameroon, and traditional wrestling is becoming the popular sport in Senegal. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan rebels, loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar, said they are committed to the implementation of the compromise peace deal signed last month in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. This comes as a three-day workshop on transitional security arrangements in South Sudan gets underway tomorrow, Saturday, in Addis Ababa. Ambassador Ezekiel Lo-Gatkuov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He says the rebels are committed to a peaceful and democratic South Sudan and have selected 11 senior army officers to attend the security arrangements workshop.
My leader, Dr. Riek Machar, if you can recall, he was the first to sign this compromise peace agreement on the 17th of August. So he's for peace, he's committed to peace, and we are also happy and do appreciate President Salva for signing this compromise peace agreement on the 26th of August. We are committed to this peace, and we have selected 11 senior army officers to attend this workshop in Addis Ababa on the 5th of September to the 8th of September.
Right now, the Sudan military is in Juba. What's the requirement that they move out of Juba?
In the agreement, yes, Juba has to be demilitarized because this is the capital of the Republic of South Sudan. And then we will have a joint integrated police and a joint integrated national security. And also all the forces in South Sudan will be put in cantonment so that the joint command from both forces will now be counting the soldiers from both sides, verifying them, all the ammunition and also the guns and all the equipment that they're having will now be verified, and they will start the recordings.
During that time of the formation of the new army, what happens to governing?
Well, in the army, there will be a joint command from the two forces, the forces of SPLM, SPLA in opposition, and the forces of the government of the Republic of South Sudan. This process of creating a new army will take 18 months so that you have an army that is loyal to the state, that is disciplined, well-trained, and they are committed to defend the Republic of South Sudan. And they are not loyal to certain regions or sections of the community in South Sudan.
Do you, the SPLM in opposition, do you all think that this agreement is workable?
Yes, it is workable. That's why we are committed to it. And that's why my leader, Dr. Machar, signed on to it. This is the best compromise that we can use to transform South Sudan. It is workable, it is implementable. The letters is there, and we are asking the spirit, because you can have a very, very good agreement, but if the spirit of implementing it is not there, it will not be. And if the spirit is there to implement this, you will have an implementable agreement. On our side, the spirit is there, and we are asking the side of Juba to have the spirit to implement the agreement.
How soon, Ezekiel, before the world sees Riek Machar or you and all the other leaders of the SPLM in opposition in Juba?
We have a pre-transitional period, which is actually 3 months. by November this year, you will have a functional government of national unity. So the transitional government of national unity will be sworn in by November. So my leader definitely will assume his responsibility as the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan.
Ambassador Ezekiel Lo Gatkuof is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. He was speaking with me from Nairobi, Kenya. Nigeria's army has announced it will reinstate more than 3,000 soldiers who were facing court-martials for their failure to follow orders in a campaign against the insurgent group Boko Haram. Chris Stein reports for VOA from Lagos.
Nigeria began reviewing the cases of 5,000 army soldiers after President Muhammadu Buhari took office in May. The decision to review the cases was made amid a public outcry over Nigerian soldiers being sent to fight Boko Haram without proper equipment. Army spokesman Sani Usman said Thursday that the army has decided to reinstate 3,032 soldiers who were convicted or were awaiting trial for various offenses, particularly those committed during the campaign against Boko Haram.
Anybody that is involved in criminal offense, his charges were not treated. So basically it was offenses that ranged from minor administrative issues to disobedience.
Boko Haram fighters have routinely outgunned Nigerian soldiers and last year took control of a swath of territory the size of Belgium, although much of that territory was reclaimed in an offensive earlier this year. The insurgents' success sapped the morale of the Nigerian army, leading to several incidents of mutiny in the ranks. Mr. Buhari won the March election in part due to public dissatisfaction with how the military was handling the insurgency. He's since replaced the heads of the military branches and the National Security Advisor. Umar Ardo, a former lecturer at the Nigerian Defense Academy, expects the reinstatements will boost army morale. He says the military recognizes it did not give soldiers the proper weapons to take on the militants.
They didn't equip the army. And if you did not equip the army and you send them to the battlefront, they either were to be killed or they run away, which they did.
The army didn't let everyone off. Nearly 2,000 were denied reinstatement, and dozens of soldiers remain on death row, awaiting execution for offenses during the mutiny last year. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Ghana's main opposition, the New Patriotic Party, has petitioned the Electoral Commission to compile a new voters list for next year's presidential and parliamentary elections. Other opposition parties support the call, but some civil society groups and the ruling National Democratic Congress say the current voter register compiled in 2012 is credible. Christian Owusu-Pare is the Electoral Commission's acting director of public affairs. He says the commission plans to organize a September 22nd stakeholder workshop at which the party will be able to present their views before a decision is made whether to have a new voter list.
The New Patriotic Party is not alone in this request, even though it is the only party that has made official statement to the commission that they have written officially to the commission making the request. And a few other groups have also joined the call to have a new voters roll before 2016. But there are still a lot of parties and other civil society organizations that also think that the register as we have it currently is useful, very good, and that if there are minor problems with the register, those challenges can be corrected. Indeed, the commission intends to have some stakeholder workshop to look at the cases that people are making against the voters register, show what concerns he has and how he proposes that the challenges that they have identified can be addressed.
Looking at the position of the EC that you have communicated to these parties, how are they taking it? And does the Electoral Commission of Ghana has the needed funds to undertake such a project ahead of the election next year?
They have all welcomed it and they have indicated to us that they will make their positions known by the deadline of the 22nd August. We're not talking about finances at the moment. Until the decision is made to replace the voters register, we cannot talk about finances. But if that becomes the decision, if after the workshop the commission finds it necessary to replace the voters register, we will prepare a budget and submit it to government.
The voter register as it stands now that the Electoral Commission of Ghana undertook in 2012, does the EC stand by it as a credible document?
I would like to leave that until the workshop comes or and the arguments have been made, and then a decision will be taken.
Looking ahead, has the Electoral Commission begun any process at all, implementing any measures before the election next year?
Well, for now, you know, this year is the elections to the local government structures, the unit committees and the district assembly. So they are the elections that we concentrated on this year. Now that those elections have been conducted, we'll start preparations towards the 2016 general elections. Come next year, we'll start active preparations towards the elections that may come either late November or early December. So we are still to set in motion any serious preparations for the elections because our concentration was on the local elections.
Christian Owusu Pare is the Ghana Electoral Commission's Acting Director of Public Affairs. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital, Accra. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September the 4th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, Forum for Democratic Change, Morgan Tsvangirai, called on his supporters yesterday to take to the streets in protest against what he called worsening economic conditions in the country and to force President Robert Mugabe's government to implement key democratic reforms ahead of the next elections. Thomas Cheripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Chitungwiza.
Addressing his followers at the Unity L Community Hall in Harare satellite town of Chitungwiza, former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai urged his supporters to confront President Robert Mugabe's government over the deepening economic and political crisis in the country. Mr. Tsvangirai said Zimbabweans should, quote, now take the bull by its horns as the economic crisis shows no signs of abating.
MDC iri kuitei, MDC iri kuitira chii, ko imi muri kuita chii.
Zimbabweans now have a problem of asking what the MDC is doing to end the crisis in the country. You are the ones who are suffering, so what are you doing about it?
Chitungwiza resident Albert Murawa supported Mr. Tsvangirai, adding that it was now time for Zimbabweans to speak with one voice.
I think the call by the former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai is noble. It only needs people who are brave, but the issue is that in any country you find that no country will ever become independent without people buying in the ideas of whatever other political parties will be selling. So Zimbabweans should actually unite.
The opposition leader said pensioners are suffering the most due to the current economic meltdown. He urged those who have not been paid by the National Social Security Authority to confront the authorities.
NASA, which is the pension arrangement, for the last 30 or so years, for the last 20 years, as far as I can see.
You should also go and confront NASA over the non-payment of your pensions.
Former Prime Minister is on a national tour consulting his supporters under a program that the MDCT has dubbed the Policy Dialogue Forum. He was accompanied by the Party Secretary General Douglas Monzora, Deputy National Chairperson Morgan Komichi, and National Executive Members of his party, Eddie Cross and Nelson Chamisa. Reporting from Chitungwiza, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Children in rural Cameroon generally receive a poor education, if any education at all. But the government is betting that learning by computer can help fill the gap. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
9-year-old Charles Ngam Eboa lives in Bari, a small village in southwestern Cameroon. He speaks French and English, despite never having attended school. When Charles was 2, his father returned home from Yaoundé, where he had been educated. He introduced his son to the computer.
I started talking when I was 1.5. Then at 2 years old, they started taking me to read letters and count numbers. I learned human biology, botany, and zoology. Physics, I'll learn it when I'm bigger.
Charles now helps other children in the village. He and his father have 2 laptops, 3 tablets, and a generator to keep the devices powered up. They download free educational applications from the internet and use search engines to find new material. According to Cameroon's Institute of Statistics, 70% of children in rural areas do not go to school because of poverty or because schools are too far away or are not adequately staffed. Illiteracy rates in rural areas are high. Charles's father, Ebwangoti, says electronic learning or e-learning could be a solution. He says his son is an example.
He's a pure e-learner. He's never attended any traditional school, never. He learns essentially at home, and when he goes to school, he assists with tutorials essentially. For example, we can teach him mathematics, and after we give him tutorials to explain to other students who are much more older than him.
The government of Cameroon is fully behind the idea. Workers recently began constructing the first of a projected 200 computer centers around the country. The centers, with about 20 computers each, are designed to promote e-learning in rural areas. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In Africa, problems with communicable diseases like HIV/AIDS, malaria, and Ebola are common. But as VOA's Jessica Berman reports, experts say adult-onset diabetes is being seen more often in Africa and in many of the world's poorest countries.
Diabetes affects 21 million Africans, a number that's expected to climb to 35 million in the next 20 years, according to the authors of an article in the journal The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology. They estimate the prevalence of undiagnosed diabetes is 62% in middle-aged adults, with those younger than age 60 making up three-quarters of deaths related to the condition. Harvard University Global Health expert Rafat Atun authored the article. The problem is not so much tied to economic improvements, he says, as it is to social and lifestyle transitions taking place in Africa.
Such as low exercise, changing jobs, and migration into urban areas without adequate green space and opportunities for exercise are all confluencing to produce this change.
Atun says there's a move away from agrarian occupations, meaning less physical activity for many Africans. He notes the medical infrastructure and technologies in sub-Saharan Africa are heavily geared toward responding to communicable diseases, not non-infectious ones such as diabetes. Atun says an international commission of health policy experts, economists, and governmental representatives will be formed to consider ways to strengthen health systems to fight diabetes in Africa. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Traditional Senegalese wrestling, also known as wrestling with blows, is the most popular sport in Senegal. Some of those who succeed at it also try their hand at Olympic wrestling. Five Senegalese Olympic wrestlers, including Isabel Sambou, will travel to Las Vegas next week to compete in the World Wrestling Championships. Thiano Carr, first vice president of the Senegalese National Wrestling Committee, talks to Ricky Shryak about the odds that Sambou and her teammates have to overcome if they are to bring home a trophy.
The World Championships to be held in Las Vegas starting from September 10th. The Senegalese wrestlers will be there.
How many of them will be there?
Altogether, five Senegalese wrestlers.
As I understand it, there are both men and women coming in as Senegalese wrestlers, correct?
Yes.
Can you tell me how many of each?
For men, the Senegalese are three. Female from Senegal, just two.
One of them is Isabel Sambou.
Well, Isabel Sambou will be going. She is currently vice champion on the continent in her category. She participated in the last Olympic Games in London and came out fourth because she missed the bronze medal. And she has been champion for over, I think, eight times in her category of champion of Africa.
So do you guys have high hopes for Isabel for this tournament?
We have, but I should say reasonably. She's not that young and she has the level. We hope she will have good results.
Do you think she's had to face especially hard obstacles getting to this level considering she's a woman?
You're right, because the ladies wrestle only in the south of Senegal. okay, and that is tradition there. So you cannot have as many competition or tournaments as you would find with male wrestlers, that's clear. So she certainly had to convince her family to let her go her way in wrestling. And she's been doing it for over 10 years now.
In Senegal, the biggest sport is traditional wrestling. Do you think this popularity of traditional wrestling helps Senegal be able to find and develop Olympic wrestlers? And what is the difference between the two sports?
Senegalese wrestling, once one of the opponents or the protagonist falls down, he's losing his combat. Olympic wrestling, you wrestle on your feet, and also wrestling on the mat.
Thianoka is the first vice president of the Senegalese National Wrestling Committee. You are speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Awuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Ethiopian Almaz Ayana clocked 8 minutes and 22.34 seconds to triumph in women's 3,000 meters at the IAAF Diamond League in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Kenyans Asbel Kiprop, Paul Kipsiele Koech, and Eunice Sum won men's 1,500 meters, 3,000 meters steeplechase, and women's 800 meters, respectively, while Algerian Taufik Makloufi and Nigerian Blessing Okagbareg Ighoteguanu Nor placed second in men's 800 meters and women's 100 meters, respectively. South Africans Anaso Jobodwana and Wade Fanny Kirk were third in 200 meters and 400 meters, respectively. In volleyball, Algeria Challenge hosts Japan in Nagoya as Kenya plays South Korea in Komaki at the World Women's Volleyball Championships today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Algeria face the Dominican Republic as Kenya engage Serbia, while on Sunday, Algeria play Russia as Kenya challenge Peru. In football, hosts Italy outplayed Algeria 16-6 as Egypt dismissed Malta 11-2 in beach soccer at the Mediterranean Beach Games in Pescara on Thursday. Lebanon pipped Tunisia 3-2. France edged Libya 2-0 in a post-match penalty shootout following a 2-2 draw as Morocco pipped Turkey 3-2. Today, Friday, Algeria play Tunisia. Libya face Albania as Morocco play Egypt. Meanwhile, Djibouti host Togo in their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier in Djibouti City today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, South Sudan challenge Equatorial Guinea. Tanzania welcome Nigeria. Burundi play Niger. Liberia engage Tunisia. Guinea-Bissau face Republic of Congo. Sierra Leone play Ethiopia. Sao Tome and Principe engage Morocco. Mauritania host South Africa. Rwanda challenge Ghana. Gabon face Sudan. Botswana host Burkina Faso. And Comoro Islands play Uganda. On Sunday, Sierra Leone challenge African champions Ivory Coast in Lagos, Nigeria, as Madagascar play Angola. Chad face Egypt. Mauritius engage Mozambique. Swaziland host Malawi, and Benin play Mali. Lesotho engage Algeria. Zimbabwe play Guinea. Libya face Cape Verde Islands, and Kenya play Zambia. The Central African Republic engage the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Gambia encounter Cameroon. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The World Health Organization has again declared Liberia Ebola-free after 42 days without a laboratory-confirmed case of the deadly virus. The WHO announced the news on Thursday. The nation now goes into a 90-day period of what the WHO called heightened surveillance as health officials watch for any recurrence of the virus. And that is it for this Friday, September 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Does the term UTC confuse you? If so, VOA wants you to know you're not alone, but keep this in mind. Very simply, UTC is the same time as GMT or Greenwich Mean Time. So if we open the show with it's 16 hours UTC, that's the same as saying it's 16 hours GMT. If you know GMT, you know UTC. Just a thought in case it helps, coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Please join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests to share their ideas and enlighten us all on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Voice of America.